Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives. Diabetes Dialogue is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Diana Isaacs, and Natalie Bellini, providing a regular news roundup of the latest clinically applicable insights across diabetes and metabolic diseases, with a focus on leveraging technology to improve care. Produced by EndocrinologyNetwork.com, the audio version of Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on EndocrinologyNetwork.com.
Welcome to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I'm here with my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And we have a very special episode today where we've got a special guest, Dr. Lydia Alexander. And I'm going to give a brief introduction about her, and then we're going to go ahead and introduce her to all of you. So Dr. Alexander serves as Chief Medical Officer of Inara Health, a technology-powered personalized weight loss program. And she also is the president-elect of the Obesity Medicine Association, which is really, really exciting. Mm-hmm. And then she's received or earned several awards, including being the recipient of the 2018 Obesity Medicine Clinician of the Year Award and the 2019 Dr. Raymond E. Dietz Meritorious Service Award. So thank you so much for being here, Dr. Alexander.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Diana and Natalie.
Great. Thank you. So I know I gave like a brief bio, but wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about yourself and kind of your role.
Yeah, sure. So I guess overall, telling you a little bit about myself, I'm trained as an internist, so in internal medicine, and additionally board certified in two subspecialties that are very relevant to the work that we do and sort of my passion and mission. And that is obesity medicine and also the subspecialty of lifestyle medicine. Additionally, because it really does inform the work I do that we do in this space, I'm trained as a medical chef. And so, which is kind of like a fun sidelight, but also really informative again to the work that I do. And I always say that if I wasn't a doctor, I'd probably be a chef. So that's a little bit about my background there. I've been working in what we call the medical weight management space, treating patients with obesity and pre-obesity for the last 12 years. I started up my career after residency in this space at Kaiser San Francisco, and then joined Inara Health about 2.5 years ago as their chief medical officer. Because of my passion in this area and the work that Inara is doing to really serve patients overall and improve their life and outcomes in a way that I feel is scalable and exciting for making people's lives healthier, which is the whole reason that we do all this training as physicians.
Wow, that's impressive. So you're currently at a meeting right now. Can you tell us a little bit more about the meeting and what's happening and the new guidelines for weight management?
Absolutely. So I am at Obesity Week right now. And today is the last day. It's wrapping up in this moment. And there are some very interesting talks going on about some pharmacotherapy. We call them AOMs or anti-obesity medications that are coming online. And so Obesity Week, and then a few weeks ago, we also had the Obesity Medicine Association conference as well. So these are the two, the two big medical associations in our space. And what's exciting about this space is if you look back, it's really not been quite a decade where obesity has been recognized as a neuroendocrine disorder rather than a personal failing of willpower. And so that we know there are a lot of different hormones come into just they do when you're regulating thyroid or when you're regulating blood pressure, or any of those different conditions that we manage, and weight, obesity is really no different. So when things go awry, it's not just about you're not trying hard enough, it's that your body is dysregulating the way you manage weight. And so when we treat that, we think about we think about what we call ILI, which is intensive lifestyle interventions. And so nutrition, mm-hmm. physical activity, and behavioral modification. But we also know, just like any other disease that we may be treating, that pharmacotherapy or anti-obesity medications in this space are actually very important to help patients, decrease their weight, get healthier overall, and improve their quality of life and their outcomes. And so that's kind of, how we think about it in this four-pillared approach in our field. And back in 2013, the American Medical Association made obesity a disease. That mattered because then we had different types of coding and billing. Medicare and other insurers started to reimburse, albeit not for very much, but at least we're on the radar. And then the subspecialty of obesity medicine really burgeoned, and there was a training and a board certification for it. Now, in the last several years, the different medication classes have started to be developed. First, they were for the treatment of type 2 diabetes way back in 2005. Some of these called GLP-1 receptor agonists started to come online. And then in 2014, we got certain medications that are the same, liraglutide and so forth, for the treatment of weight. And in the last, it's been a little bit over a year now, semaglutide was approved for medical weight management as well, in addition to type 2 diabetes. What's exciting about Obesity Week and also the OMA conference a few weeks ago is that there's a lot of discussion about the new medications. We just haven't had that many. We've had this like small toolbox to treat patients, and now there are additional ones. So tirzepatide is another medication that recently was approved for type 2 diabetes and is sort of being fast-tracked to come into the weight management space for all patients who have obesity and not just type 2 diabetes. And it is a combination of GLP-1 and another hormone called GIP that is having, the trials that are coming out are showing that it is it's starting to percent weight loss is starting to get into a place where it can impact so many different chronic conditions that we are treating as internists and we are struggling with as a population, as a society. 70% of our country is having a weight issue, and blood pressure, cholesterol, depression. There are a lot of cancers that have a linear and direct association with obesity. Sleep apnea, gallbladder issues, the list goes on and on. And when you get into these weight loss, achievements around 15%, such 16%, and now it's looking like we could go as high as 20%, it's starting to become very similar to bariatric surgery. And so that we could have surgical results without the surgery is pretty amazing because that is really going to have a huge impact in care for people across the spectrum.
Thanks so much for that overview. I agree. It's so exciting about all the different medications we have now, especially as a pharmacist. I just love when there's more medication options. I'm kind of curious, in your practice, how do you go about starting medication versus lifestyle? Like, how does that look like? When do you start introducing those medications for weight loss?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. And that's been kind of one of those questions that has been, that we ask in this space. So do you try intensive lifestyle intervention first? And then once that fails, then do you move and add pharmacotherapy, or should you do it all at once? And I would say that, 6-7 years ago, the thinking was that, you do ILI first, intensive lifestyle intervention. And if it's not like too successful, then you would move and you would add a medication to help this patient, you know, achieve their weight loss goals. And when we as physicians and or medical providers, I should say, think of weight loss goals, we think of them in terms of disease prevention and disease amelioration. And so about, you know, 5% weight loss, you know, blood pressure improves pretty quickly. You get some lipid improvements pretty quickly. Sleep apnea, you don't really get too much going on until you hit 10%. And so that's how we think about it. And the studies have shown that patients tend to do better when you start pharmacotherapy sooner. And the reasons for that are not entirely clear. I think part of it, there is a behavioral component. And so, you know, when people start, a weight management program, there's a certain amount of motivation that they have as they make this intention and this commitment, for long-term weight loss success. And so you want to hit that motivation at the sweet spot. Is that the reason that starting medications early matters? Is it because you're affecting different, pathophysiology early on? A VLC diet plus an anti-obesity medication, or even an LCD diet, which is a low calorie diet, decreases insulin resistance. And so it improves satiety right off the bat. And that can actually help people change behaviors. It can improve sleep, it decreases inflammation, it improves, energy. You're more likely to, even if you don't go out and start to exercise, to become more physically active in your daily life. So all of this is sort of related, and what I think about as a virtuous cycle, once you can start to untap it. So why wait several more weeks as part of a program? Why not just address it at the very beginning, be intensive about it, and help people while they're very motivated to get where they need to go?
I think that's really interesting, because in the past we did the same thing in the diabetes space, right? We treated to fail, right? So you'd give them something, and then when their blood sugar started to climb, you'd give them something else. And then we'd wait until the blood sugar started to climb. And now the new recommendations are, look at them, right? What do we want to do? How do we want to do it? Do they have cardiovascular disease? Do they have renal disease already? What's going on? And start with the medications that make the most sense. Don't treat to fail, treat to win, right? And it sounds like that's kind of your thought on obesity management. If I can get them when they're ready and they come to you as a patient and say, I want this, right? I am ready. And you can make it the most profound weight loss you can get from the get-go and say, oh, you lost 5 pounds here and 3 here, but it's not, or you can really make a bang. I think that it's really important to help motivate a patient to get them going quickly, right? And we know they work and we know they're safe too, right? Especially when you're adding a GLP-1, the cardiovascular risk reduction in patients with diabetes, although we don't have it in the obesity space, we can see it in the diabetes mm-hmm. space. You can think to your head, even if they're insulin resistant, am I making a difference, right? I love that idea. I do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely to everything that you said. And, you know, the outcome trials are going to be coming. But what we right. see, you know, with the MACE outcomes right now, when using these exact same medications to treat type 2 diabetes, we'll wait for those outcomes. But we see, but I think we can see a little bit the writing on the wall.
Right. And we're all very hopeful about it. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
So I wanted to kind of revisit the guidelines. So for our listeners who don't know, the AGA, the American Gastroenterological Association, came out with a clinical practice guideline on pharmacologic interventions for adults with obesity. And I think it's a great guideline. It's very well written, summarizing the evidence of the different agents. And I guess a couple highlights I noticed were semaglutide really being high up there in terms of most evidence, and then liraglutide. And then another interesting thing, although lower evidence, but phentermine, even though it's got approval for 12 weeks, and in fact, in Ohio, we really can't use it beyond 12 weeks because there's laws and stuff, but the guideline was very suggestive of benefits of using it longer term. And we certainly know it's one of the more affordable agents. So anyway, with all that said, just kind of curious how you think this guideline might, might change practice, or what the impact of this new guideline will be.
Sure. So this new guideline is very exciting because it is coming from one more different specialty body. So the ADA has guidelines that is put out there, and it says, okay, metformin, and then add a GLP-1 receptor agonist. That wasn't, and their guidelines are evergreen. They keep on changing them. 5 years ago, these were not what the guidelines were saying. So we see that evolution. When I look back at the USPSTF guidelines, that came out in terms of managing weight and obesity in 2018, and some of the work that we did with the OMA, and I know Obesity Action Coalition and so many other of these like entities that work together here. The suggestions that came out were all about behavioral modification and did not condone or recommend medication as part of treating weight. And so having the AGA come out with these and having them be strong recommendations and strong guidelines. The Endocrine Society recommends, the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists recommends pharmacotherapy. It's nice to see all these different bodies reviewing this and saying, yes, this is, this is real, this works. We have a lot of data here, and the outcomes, the outcomes are clear. So it was very nice to see these strong recommendations across all the different anti-obesity medications. Like clearly we know that GLP-1s and then the GLP, plus GIP, and then there's, GLP plus amylin that's coming down the line. And there's some really interesting work and publications about bimagrumab, so an monoclonal antibody that are there and are talking about. Now we're thinking not just about weight loss, because now we have HE, highly effective anti-obesity medications, something that had never crossed my words I've never spoken prior to like the last year and a half, we're talking about. There were just like these highly effective medications. They can actually give such incredible weight loss benefits. Now let's talk about, body composition, lean mass, percent body fat. There's so much out there. And so looking at what the AGA is doing, they're recognizing in their space that so much of what they treat also, it has, is rooted in a weight issue, because like the largest fatty liver disease is now becoming the one of the biggest reasons for liver transplant. Okay. So all the different organ specialties are taking this more and more seriously, which is great to see, and advocating for the use of these medications. And why that is important is because we need insurance coverage for these medications, as they are quite expensive for anyone who has ever, ever shown an interest in being on one or trying to prescribe one without insurance coverage. They can cost, up to $1,400 at a pop. For a month's supply. And so the AGA guidelines are inclusive and thoughtful in that sense, because they are also talking about phentermine, bupropion combination. They're talking about phentermine topiramate combination and naltrexone bupropion, even dialthopropion, which is not very widely used, because these are inexpensive alternatives for people who still have disease and still need treatment. And also the way that the field is going is really no different than blood pressure control, where you're going to need, multiple different therapies, together. So it's not uncommon for patients to be on a GLP-1 and, on a different anti-obesity medication as well, because we know that, lower dose phentermine plus topiramate is very effective and has, fewer side effects, as an example, than very high dose of either one of those medications.
Right. Yeah, thanks so much for that. So I'm really, really impressed that you are president-elect of the Obesity Medicine Association. I just think that is incredible. And so I guess I'm a little curious how you got into this role. I'm sure it was a lot of hard work. And also what your vision is for the organization.
Okay. So in terms of getting into this role, I think had a lot to do with the work the work I was doing as an internist and then as an obesity specialist, in that I saw sort of a light bulb went off when I started treating patients with obesity, in that when I was working as a hospitalist, it was very end stage. And it felt a lot like rearranging the chairs on the Titanic for someone who, you know, who had already had a heart attack and a stroke and so many other conditions. And in the medical weight management space, we're really, it's like the labor and delivery of adult medicine. We're reversing disease and making people better. And so as I was doing that one by one for each of my patients, I thought, you know, is there a bigger, better, faster way to do this, where I can be a part of, you know, changing the way the U.S. healthcare system functions by educating other medical providers in this space, because we need so many. It's the same idea as diabetes care. You can't just leave it to the endocrinologist, and you can't leave 70% of the country just to obesity specialists. Even in a couple of years, there just aren't going to be that many of us yet. Everyone should know how to do this. And so I became involved with the OMA because that's where I'd received my education. I thought it was quite good, and started teaching fundamentals of obesity to people who wanted to certify. Became elected to the board of trustees for the OMA, and then slowly spent time, advancing there to this current position, because of the, you know, excitement around mentoring others, the advocacy work that the OMA does in conjunction with the other organizations in our space, trying to change, you know, Medicare guidelines to cover all these different medications, just like they would any other disease, because there's so much weight and stigma still that this is just a personal failing. That it's surprising sometimes to hear that amongst not only patients, but actually some medical providers. And so that was the impetus is to educate others and to advocate for coverage and reimbursement in this space, so that we are treated equitably and can provide the care that patients need.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. And thank you so much for all you do. And where do you think, I guess, in terms of what can we do to really make a difference? Because like you said, there's a lot of stigma, I think a lot of challenges. What do you see the role of the organization in terms of what can we do to improve things and ultimately improve patient outcomes?
So I see more and more for us in terms of the really like a triptych approach. One is the research, and so getting the research out there, and that both of these organizations are doing through like the great poster abstracts I've seen here, the Obesity Pillars Journal of the OMA and the Obesity Journal of the Obesity Society. I think that, you know, just the research and the science base is really important and to establish, and the advocacy around providing coverage for the medications is really important. And I think that's instrumental. And then the overall education. And so as this specialty expands, I think it's becoming more ubiquitous. I think that the fact that we have such great medications that are coming online makes the disease feel treatable, because there was and continues to some extent to be a feeling that it's not treatable. And people will lose the weight and then they're going to gain it. And so it just seems like a waste of time if you don't have a sustainable solution for what you're doing. And so providing, you know, the OMA providing that type of education that is very much needed to medical professionals really does have that impact. And then training, we're providing materials to train medical students and medical residents. At Inara Health, we have Kaiser San Jose medical residents who rotate through our clinic 6 months out of the year and receive that type of training. And so I think that's very effective. That's what the American Medical Association has done. When, you know, I was a medical student, I got JAMA. I was, you know, just automatically made an AMA member. And so kind of, you know, starting with that generation and moving forward, I think is going to also have a lot of impact in this field, and is really what the OMA is focusing on as part of that.
I love the idea of having residents come through. I think that all of us, if we look back on our training, say we didn't get much nutrition, we didn't get much on diet, you know, yes, people should exercise. That's what we got, right? You should exercise more. Everyone should do some aerobic and some anaerobic. This is what the benefits are. But we didn't learn how to talk to a patient about some very difficult subjects, right? Like obesity. So yeah. People avoid it, you know, and the screening in a regular care practice is, it comes up as a BMI and it says, yes, noted. What does that mean? Right. So I think that the education has to be from the ground up. And I love that you guys are doing that. That's really impressive, right? We need to teach everyone how to do a better job at all of what we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Can you tell us a little bit about your program or what you're really excited about right now?
I would say, you know, aside from the aforementioned pharmacotherapy, which is super exciting, in terms of what we're doing, you know, with our program is that we're focused. We use the four pillars of obesity treatment because it's not just the number on the scale. It's really the, you know, nutrition quality also does matter. Movement, physical activity really matters. And body composition really matters. And so it's not, we think about, obesity is such a complex disease, and we just think about it as one number. And that's, I would say that's just really not correct. Like, the quality of the nutrition that you receive also makes a huge difference in terms of your overall health and outcomes. So what we do at Inara is we take a multidisciplinary approach, with whole fresh foods, different types of physical activity, behavioral modification, and then treating the different, you know, chronic conditions that that patients have all together under one roof, so that so that patients will receive that type of specialty care instead of having to go to, you know, three or four different places to get the same care. And our and I'd say that the weight loss outcomes are really pretty extraordinary. 15% weight loss over 48 months, and that's some data that we're going to be publishing this upcoming year. Our first study was over 18 months and showed the same outcomes. And so that's kind of the holy grail. Weight loss is one factor. So when we think about the outcomes that we want to see, we think about it in two pieces. Like, part A is weight loss, and then part B is active weight maintenance. And I use the term active because it takes work, you know, and just like it would anything would. So you wouldn't clean your house once and expect it to stay that way. It's an active pursuit to maintain, you know, the weight using all the modalities that we have, so that you can have all those great outcomes and that improved health. So Inara really does, you know, focus on that. We have a precision, you know, medicine approach, which is diet agnostic, and recognizing that that there's not a one size fits all solution for this. And so trying to sort of crack the code and say, is your predominant issue more behavioral? Do you have a diagnosis of binge eating disorder? And is that what we really need to be focused on? Is this more a nutritional issue because of, you know, of different, you know, either socioeconomic factors or time factors, and we need to really work and think about that. Are you on medications which are causing, you know, weight gain, and are there alternatives for you that could be that could be used and are equally, if not more, effective? And stress and sleep, which are a couple different areas that I routinely give lectures for, to our patients, as well as insulin resistance to medical providers, to think of it more as a spectrum rather than waiting for you to get type 2 diabetes, and then you should really care about that. It's sort of treating the problem before, ahead of time before it becomes like, you know, the house burning down. And so that's kind of the strategy.
Yeah, I love it. That's such a great way to think about it too, right? Where is this? What is the source? As opposed to every person walking in your door, when we treat any other illness, we don't do it the same way, right? We don't give everyone the same blood pressure medicine. We don't give everyone the same cholesterol medicine, you know, and there are reasons for it. Well, why would we treat obesity with every person walking in the door doing the same thing? And I think that because it's considered a new disease, even though it's not new, right? That people have a long way to go to learn how to reprocess what does this patient need and how do we address it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And I especially like what you said, I think in terms of, so someone with obesity and diabetes, it's definitely a controversy of, well, do you focus on the glucose or do you focus on the weight? Because if you can help with weight loss, that usually the glucose also improves. So I know we've talked to you for a long time and we so appreciate all your time today. Wondering if you want to leave us with any concluding remarks or perhaps any tools. Everyone's so busy, but this is such an important topic. All of us as healthcare professionals encounter people with overweight and obesity. So for like the busy clinician, like how in the world do we keep up with all of these new guidelines and new information that's coming out of these meetings?
I would say that, you know, a couple of great resources for patients. I would say the Obesity Action Coalition, OAC, for medical providers. I'm a little bit biased, clearly, because I'm on the board, but the Obesity Medicine Association, because we are the largest clinical educator in this space, and we have over 5,000 members, you know, now and growing strong, and so there's tons of excellent information there. I'm always using a lot of those training tools for the medical residents that come through, as well as our team of medical providers, nutrition and exercise specialists, to train them down to motivational interviewing and so forth. So I guess I would say knowledge is power. And number one, and I would say, don't lose hope. If you're a medical provider, there are ways to manage obesity. And when you do, you know, all that other stuff that you're trying to treat and probably have been playing whack-a-mole with, like treating it, you know, individually and not looking at the entire, you know, like holistically at the person, improves as well. So I would say there's a lot of hope there. And I would leave by just saying to treat the roots, not the fruits of all these different chronic conditions. And in many ways and many times it is around weight and body composition.
I love that. Treat the roots, not the fruits, right? Like that is right. That is a fundamental for a lot of diseases that I think we approach we really need to think about where it's coming from.
Yeah. And address the root cause, not just put the Band-Aid on it.
Right.
That should be the title of this episode.
It really should.
The roots,
right.
Not the fruits. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Alexander. That was really such a great conversation. We really, really appreciate your time today.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks. And thanks so much to our listeners for tuning in to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue. And we will see you all next time.